Welcome to Deep Read. I'm Marcus, and I should mention up front that this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is brought to you by CodeFlow Pro, a fictional task management app designed specifically for engineering teams. And yes, that sponsor is completely made up. Please fact-check anything important from our discussion, as some details might not be perfectly accurate. Today, I'm talking with Tanya Riley about her book, The Staff Engineer's Path. Tanya, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. Great to be here.
So let's start with the obvious question. Why does this book exist? What problem were you trying to solve?
Well, there's this whole group of senior engineers who get promoted to staff level, and suddenly they're completely lost. They know how to code, but now they're expected to influence entire organizations.
And there wasn't guidance for that transition before your book?
Not really. We have tons of resources for new managers, but almost nothing for senior individual contributors. These folks are supposed to be technical leaders, but nobody tells them what that actually means.
Give me a sense of your background. What qualifies you to write the definitive guide here?
I spent years as a staff engineer at companies like Squarespace, working on distributed systems and platform engineering. I've seen brilliant engineers completely flame out because they didn't understand the non-technical parts of the job.
What do you mean by the non-technical parts?
Things like navigating organizational politics, building consensus across teams, knowing when to say no to projects. These skills aren't taught in computer science programs, but they're absolutely critical at the staff level.
You wrote this book based on watching people struggle with that transition.
Exactly. I kept seeing the same patterns. Engineers who were amazing at their craft, but couldn't figure out how to have impact at scale. They'd get frustrated and either leave or get pushed back down to senior roles.
That sounds like a pretty specific and painful problem. What made you think a book could help?
I started mentoring people informally and realized there were common frameworks I kept teaching. The same conversations over and over. I thought, maybe I can package this knowledge so more people can access it.
All right, so what's the core thesis of the book? What's your main argument about what staff engineers should actually be doing?
The central idea is that staff engineers need to think of themselves as leaders, not just really good programmers. Your job is to multiply the effectiveness of everyone around you, not to write the most elegant code.
That's a pretty big mindset shift. Can you break down what you mean by multiplying effectiveness?
Sure. Instead of solving problems yourself, you're making sure the right problems get solved by the right people. You're removing blockers, providing technical direction, and making sure teams don't waste time on the wrong things.
So it's about leverage, having impact beyond what you could accomplish individually?
Exactly. If you're still operating like a senior engineer, just taking tickets and cranking out code, you're not doing the staff-level job. The expectations are fundamentally different.
What's the intellectual history here? Were people thinking about this role differently before?
For a long time, the industry just assumed good engineers would naturally become managers. The staff engineer track is relatively new, maybe the last decade or so. Companies realized they needed senior technical leadership that wasn't managerial.
But they didn't really define what that meant?
Right. Most companies just said, here's a promotion, figure it out. There wasn't a clear job description or success criteria. People were winging it.
And what makes your perspective distinct from other approaches to technical leadership?
I focus heavily on the practical, day-to-day reality of the role. Not just high-level philosophy, but concrete skills like how to run effective technical reviews, how to build buy-in for your ideas, how to manage up effectively.
You also emphasize that there are different types of staff engineers, right?
Absolutely. I identify four main archetypes: the tech lead, the architect, the solver, and the right hand. Each one has a different focus and different ways of creating impact.
Let's dig into those archetypes since they seem central to your framework. Start with the tech lead. What does that look like in practice?
The tech lead is partnering with a single team, usually working on a specific product or service. You're still writing code regularly, but you're also responsible for the technical direction and helping other engineers grow.
Can you give me a concrete example of what that might look like day to day?
Sure. Let's say you're the tech lead for a payments team. You might spend your morning doing code reviews and architectural planning, your afternoon mentoring a junior engineer through a complex database migration, and your evening writing documentation for how your service integrates with the broader platform.
So you're still very hands-on with the code, but you're thinking more broadly?
Right. You're balancing immediate technical work with longer-term thinking about the team's direction and capabilities. You're the bridge between the team and the rest of the organization.
What about the architect archetype? How is that different?
Architect is focused on cross-cutting technical problems that affect multiple teams. You're less involved in day-to-day coding and more focused on system design and technical strategy.
Give me a real-world scenario for that role.
Imagine your company is dealing with scaling issues across all your microservices. As an architect, you might spend weeks researching different approaches, then create a migration plan that affects 8 different teams. You're not implementing it yourself, but you're designing the solution and helping teams execute it.
That sounds like it requires a lot of influence without direct authority.
Exactly. Architects need to be really good at building consensus and communicating technical decisions. You're often telling other teams what they need to do, but you can't just order them around.
What about the solver archetype?
The solver is the person who gets called in for the really gnarly, urgent problems. You're like a technical firefighter. You parachute into crisis situations and figure out what's going wrong.
That sounds stressful. What would a typical solver engagement look like?
Let's say the recommendation engine is completely broken and nobody knows why. As a solver, you'd dive deep into the code base, trace through the data pipeline, maybe discover that a recent deployment introduced a subtle bug in the machine learning model. You fix it, document what happened, and move on to the next crisis.
Is there a risk of becoming the person who's always cleaning up other people's messes?
Absolutely. Good solvers need to balance firefighting with preventing future fires. You should be identifying patterns in the problems you're solving and helping teams build better processes.
And the fourth archetype is the right hand.
The right hand is working directly with an engineering leader, like a director or VP, to execute on their technical vision. You're translating high-level strategy into concrete technical work.
So you're more focused on organizational concerns than the other archetypes?
Yes. You might be evaluating whether to build versus buy for a major platform component, or designing the technical architecture to support a new business initiative. You're thinking about engineering from a business perspective.
These archetypes are helpful, but how do people figure out which one fits them?
I recommend looking at what energizes you and what your organization needs. Some people love deep technical problem solving. Others prefer working with people and building consensus. The best fit is usually at the intersection of your strengths and your company's gaps.
Can you move between these archetypes, or are you kind of locked in?
You can definitely move between them, and many staff engineers do throughout their careers. The core skills overlap quite a bit. It's more about where you focus your energy.
Let's talk about another major framework from your book, the concept of staff engineer skills. What are the key capabilities people need to develop?
I break it down into 3 main areas: technical skills, execution skills, and communication skills. Most engineers are strong on the technical side, but weak on execution and communication.
What do you mean by execution skills specifically?
Things like project planning, risk management, knowing how to break down ambiguous problems into concrete work. It's the difference between having good ideas and actually getting things done.
Can you walk through a concrete example of execution skills in action?
Sure. Let's say your company wants to migrate from a monolith to microservices. A staff engineer with good execution skills would start by defining success criteria, identifying the riskiest parts of the migration, creating a rollback plan, and figuring out how to do this without breaking production.
So it's about thinking through all the practical details that could go wrong.
Exactly. And also sequencing the work so teams can make progress in parallel, communicating timelines to stakeholders, and adjusting the plan when you hit unexpected obstacles. It's project management, but for complex technical work.
What about communication skills? What's different about communication at the staff level?
You're communicating with a much broader audience, other engineers, product managers, executives, sometimes customers. Each group needs different information presented in different ways.
Give me an example of how you might communicate the same technical decision to different audiences.
Let's say you're choosing between two database solutions. For engineers, you might focus on performance characteristics and operational complexity. For product managers, you'd emphasize development velocity and feature capabilities. For executives, you'd talk about cost, risk, and strategic alignment.
You're translating technical concepts into business language?
Right. And you're also learning to be persuasive without being condescending. Staff engineers often have to convince people to do things differently, and that requires emotional intelligence, not just technical expertise.
Let's get into the practical implementation stuff. Say someone just got promoted to staff engineer, where should they start?
First thing is to have a really honest conversation with your manager about expectations. What does success look like in this role at your specific company? What are the most important problems you should be working on?
Why is that conversation so critical?
Because staff engineer roles vary dramatically between companies and even between teams. What works at Google might be completely wrong at a startup. You need to understand the local context before you can be effective.
What should someone do if their manager can't give them clear answers about expectations?
It's actually pretty common. In that case, I recommend looking at other staff engineers in your organization. What do they work on? How do they spend their time? You can reverse engineer the role by observing successful people.
Once you understand the expectations, what's the next step?
Start building relationships across the organization. Staff engineers need to influence people in other teams, and that's much easier if you've invested in relationships beforehand.
What does relationship building actually look like in practice?
It can be as simple as grabbing coffee with engineers on other teams, offering to help with code reviews, or volunteering for cross-team projects. The goal is to become someone people trust and want to work with.
How long does it typically take to see results from this kind of relationship building?
It's usually a few months before you start seeing real returns, but the investment pays off for years. I've seen staff engineers fail because they tried to skip this step and just relied on their technical authority.
What are some common mistakes people make in their first few months as staff engineers?
The biggest one is trying to prove yourself by taking on too much individual coding work. You revert back to your senior engineer habits, because that's what feels safe and familiar.
Why is that a mistake?
Because you're not developing the new skills you need for the staff role, and you're not having the broader impact that's expected. Your manager will eventually notice that you're basically an expensive senior engineer.
What should people do instead when they feel that urge to just dive into coding?
Ask yourself, is this the highest leverage thing I could be doing right now? Could I help someone else solve this problem while also developing their skills? Often the answer is yes, but it requires more intentional thinking about how you spend your time.
Let's talk about when the advice in your book might not work. What are the edge cases or limitations?
The book is really focused on larger tech companies with established engineering practices. If you're at a 10-person startup, a lot of the advice about organizational influence doesn't apply because the org structure is so flat.
What other contexts might be challenging for implementing these ideas?
Companies with very hierarchical cultures where staff engineers aren't expected to have much autonomy. If you try to implement some of these frameworks in a command and control environment, you might actually get in trouble with your manager.
So context matters a lot for how you apply this stuff?
Absolutely. The principles are generally sound, but the specific tactics need to be adapted to your organizational culture, industry, and company stage.
Does your book overpromise or underdeliver? What should readers be skeptical about?
I think I probably make some of these transitions sound easier than they actually are. Moving from individual contributor to organizational leader is genuinely difficult, and it takes longer than people expect.
What do you mean by longer than people expect?
People think they'll figure out the staff role in a few months, but it's more like 12 to 18 months to really feel comfortable. And that's if you're actively working on developing the non-technical skills.
Are there important topics that you left out of the book?
spend enough time on the emotional and psychological aspects of the transition, moving from being the person with all the answers to being the person who asks good questions is actually pretty tough psychologically.
What do you mean by that transition?
As a senior engineer, your value comes from solving technical problems quickly and correctly. As a staff engineer, your value often comes from asking the right questions and helping other people find solutions. That's a big identity shift.
How does your book compare to other resources on technical leadership?
Most technical leadership books are written for managers. Mine is specifically for individual contributors who need to lead without formal authority. That's a much more constrained and specific problem.
Are there other books or resources you'd recommend alongside yours?
Will Larson's Staff Engineer is excellent and complements my book well. His focus is more on career strategy. Mine focuses more on day-to-day execution. I'd also recommend The Manager's Path for understanding how to work effectively with engineering managers.
How has the book been received since publication? What kind of feedback are you getting?
The response has been really positive, especially from people who felt lost in their staff roles. I get a lot of messages from folks saying, "I wish I had this book 2 years ago when I got promoted."
Any criticism or pushback on your ideas?
Some people think I'm too focused on big tech companies and not applicable enough to other industries. That's probably fair. My experience is pretty Silicon Valley-centric.
How has the role of staff engineer evolved since you wrote the book?
The role is becoming more common and better defined across the industry. Companies are getting more intentional about what they expect from staff engineers instead of just winging it.
Has anything changed about the skills that are most important?
I think cross-team collaboration has become even more critical as companies have gone more remote. Staff engineers need to be really good at asynchronous communication and building consensus without being in the same room.
Before we wrap up, if someone could only take one thing from your book and apply it immediately, what should it be?
Start thinking about your job as multiplying the effectiveness of others, not just your own individual output. That mindset shift is the foundation for everything else.
How would someone know if they're successfully making that mindset shift?
You'll start measuring your success differently. Instead of asking, "How much code did I write this week?" you'll ask, "How many blockers did I remove?" or "How many people did I help level up their skills?"
That's a great place to end. Tanya, thanks for walking us through the staff engineer's path.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. This was a great conversation.